It's just my Rav Shlita. If I may reflect those words, we say this Shir Le'iloi Nishmas Rav Yosef Ben Elozar Rabinovitz. We wish David L'chaim Aruchim together with all his family, and also David is kindly sponsoring in loving memory of Reb Avrom Tzvi Ben Mordechai Yaakov, our dear friend Ashley Klinger. We wish Simon and family L'chaim Aruchim. We will never forget the wonderful place that Ashley took in this bagel share, how he contributed to it. And, pardon?
Shavers.
Yeah. And his example was one which was set for all of us in the way he was, his humility, his dedication, and his fervor for Yiddishkeit. Part two of Tefillin. Last time was a general introduction. If you missed it, it doesn't matter, because each shiur on this subject is self-contained. There are lots of pitfalls when it comes to the subject of tefillin. When you want to buy a kosher pizza, you've got a heksher to rely on. When you go and buy a pair of tefillin, does it come with a heksher? And even if it does, how reliable is the fact that mistakes could easily have been made? There's a sefer called Tefillin and Mezuzas Kilchosan, which I've got in front of me, very pictorial sefer, and it's written by someone called Reb Zev Greenwald, and he says they did a survey on the kashrus of that was on mezuzas, actually, not tefillin, to see how accurate they were. They tried out the Bank of Israel central office, where there were 470 mezuzas, and two of them were found to be kosher. They did a survey at Kiryat Herzog, where they did 950 checks on the Zuz. 43% were kosher. And believe it or not, he refers to a survey they did in Golders Green, northwest London. He doesn't say how many mezuzahs they checked, but they found 28% to be kosher. And
a few years ago, we had ours checked, and Rob brought somebody here.
Yes.
And 12 out of 17 were not kosher.
12 out of 17 were not kosher. So what he writes in his sefer is, if 99% are kosher, then that means they are 100% possible. So if a mezuzah or a tefillin is 99% kosher, then it's 100% possible, because it just needs one letter written wrongly. It's a bit like the guy who says that he's a 99% vegetarian. He's not a vegetarian, right? It's the same idea with your tefillin. Now, a Sefer Torah has 304,805 letters in it. Your tefillin have 3,188 letters, which is 1594 times 2 for the Shal Yad and for the Shal Rosh. And the mezuzah has 713 letters. And it doesn't take much mismanagement by a sofa inadvertently to make a mistake. However careful and diligent he is, mistakes can be made. And of course, the kavonis required for a sofa, he's not allowed to listen to a CD when he's writing, even if it's a shia, right? That no music or anything. He's got to have 100% concentration. But you know, it's very easy to spot mistakes. And indeed, in this sefer, he gives a couple of examples of tefillin. No, these are mezuzahs. He actually gives you a reproduction of a mezuzah on one page and again on another page. And he asks you to spot the mistake. And he gives you a list of all the mistakes. And he finds, and in one of them there are 56 mistakes and another one 47 mistakes. So it might make you feel like losing trust in the sofrim who you pay, of course, hundreds of pounds, if not thousands of pounds. It's worrying, because
most of the sofrim don't write their mezuzahs themselves. There are people who write mezuzahs, and they buy them from them.
Yeah, alright, so that's the problem. Who do you know where they're from? It's a bit like buying some manufactured item and you want to know where it comes from, and there's a label on it. It says manufactured inside the EU. It doesn't tell you who manufactured it. It could be any one of 27 countries which have manufactured it. You just don't know what useless information that is. It would be nice if we at least would know who the sofa is. And that way you can take references, check his credentials, and it's not just whether there might be a letter missing or a word missing or an extra word put in. It can be the shape of the letters. It can be if one letter is touching another letter. It can be the bottom of your tefillin, right? So whether the black boxes are kosher and the way they're prepared, are they perfect square? Is the color right? Is the shid or the side done right? There are so many different aspects which can make the tefillin possible. And even if everything is checked and everything looks proper, you know, if the one who prepared the bottom, it might not have been the sofa, but somebody else, if the parshas were not put in the right order, with the right kavanah, then the tefillin apostle, which can be very worrying.
What about having them, do they not have them computer checked?
Right, I'll come to that. A major part of my discussion today will be about computers, because it's modern and it's interesting and it's practical. But I do know somebody who bought a Sefer Torah on eBay. Now, there may be nothing wrong with that, but he checked out where it was coming from. In fact, it was a shul on Lower East Side in New York, which was closing down, and so they thought the most practical way of advertising this Sefer Torah would be on eBay, because then you got an auction and whoever bids the most wins. And to this guy's utter surprise, it was a fellow in Golders Green who I know very well, his name Meid Aliyah now, he bid for it, and to his surprise he won the bid. So he flew over to New York and he met the people from the shul, and they told him they had this safe for a very long time and it was used and very reliable, blah blah blah, and he reserved a second seat on the aeroplane so that when he brought it back as hand luggage he could actually seat the Sefer Torah in a dignified way on the seat and put it behind a seat belt for safety. And and then he travelled back to London with it proudly, and there was a nice ceremony, and it was brought to the Golders Green place Hamedrash in lots of singing and dancing, and they started to use it every Shabbos morning. Came Yom Kippur afternoon, when they were reading the Parsha about the Arroyos in Acharimos, and the Baal Keres stopped, his face went red, and he realised that a whole column was missing. It created a real embarrassment. There were lots of red faces. And since then, one person's taken it upon himself to read right through the Sefer Torah, which is being used that Shabbos morning, on the Friday, just to be 100% sure. And what this fellow does is, because there's a Hashkama minion, he does it twice. Well, he's a Shnai Mikra, and he does it that way through each Sefer Torah, because there's no way they want this event to have to happen again. There's a story told about Rav Yaakov Abu Hatzaira. He was the grandfather of the famous Baba Sali. He lived in 1806 to 1880 in Morocco, in a place called Marrakech. And he sought a sofa, Muncha, in that town. And he was recommended, a very God-fearing man. And he made a request from this sofa, who came with high credentials, that he should dip in the mikveh each time before he writes the Hashem's name.
But you have to do that anyway.
To dip in the mikveh each time before writing Hashem's name.
They do a lot of Hashem's names at one go.
That's right.
And the fellow agreed. And he asked him to have certain kavanos when he writes based on the Arizal. And the fellow did it diligently. But it came to one incident where the sofa realized that he had just written Hashem's name and he had not dipped in the mikveh beforehand. And he thought, well, still kosher, I can't go back now, it's too much. And he carried on writing the tefillin and he finished it and he gave it to the Rav Abu Hatzaira. And Rav Hatzaira said to him, you forgot one Shem Hashem, didn't you, to have the right kavanah. And the fellow asked for mechila and he did the whole thing all over again. Apparently hundreds of people used to visit his cave there in Egypt until the year 2012, when Muslim Brotherhood tried to put a stop to these pilgrimages and the Egyptian government banned them through allegedly moral offences. Anyway,
I didn't quite catch, so we had to write the whole Sefer Torah again?
It was a tefillin he asked for, and he had to write the parshas all over again from scratch.
Whose grave?
This was Rav Yaakov Abu Hatzaira.
Great, not the sofa.
So he was someone in very high esteem. He was seen to have Ruach HaKodesh powers. I mean, he knew that the tefillin. He had known that the tefillin he received, that there was one Shem Hashem which was not written with a right kavana. How he knew, don't ask me, but that's what happened, and that's the story as told. So it's important, says the Mishnah Berurah in Siman Lama Gimel, that one has to buy from a mumcha. And it's true that you can buy tefillin on eBay for like £150 or something like that, and they make some statements on the screen that, you know, it comes from a reliable source and it's kosher, but they won't say by whom and from whom and where it's written, and one has to be very wary of such things. In fact, there's a very reliable fellow who sells a lot of tefillin in England, who's got a whole factory in Israel with about 80 sofrim working under him. And so many rabbonim testify that he's very good. And in fact, I went to him when I wanted to buy some tefillin for my son's bar mitzvah. And he showed me some parshiyos. And I was umming and hawing about them. And he said to me, look, I don't mind if you go and take it to your rav to have a look at. And come back to me. And he trusted me to go off with these parshiyos. And I showed it to a rov, and I told him, you know, I'm a bit uneasy about, you know, this bit over here. It just seems as though letter looks like it's touching the other letter, and I'm a bit suspicious about a certain yud, because the bottom left of the yud should come down to a sharp point, and it doesn't look 100% to me. So this rov said to me, well, why do you have to make compromises? If you're unsure, just don't buy it. So I gave it back to him and said, sorry, I'm not buying it. And he was very upset with me about it. Anyway, I ended up buying through somebody in Stamford Hill who had connections with one of the top sofrim in Bnei Barak, and I looked at his work and work of art. And if you go by recommendations, you're probably on a right track. So our next question, which comes out from this, is how often do you need to check your tefillin? After all, if there are human errors in it, then it's a good idea to check it out every so often. And of course, things can go wrong. If a word is missing, well, that should be picked up at the very beginning. But over a period of time, there may be other things which can cause your tefillin to become possible. Sometimes people often leave tefillin in their cars, and they don't realize that leaving tefillin in a hot car can do more harm to the tefillin than if they're left somewhere damp, because the heat can actually melt the ink. And a mumcha told me about how the ink can flow in such circumstances. I mean, if you leave a dog in a hot car, it's a criminal offence. I once phoned the RSPCA when I saw a dog barking away in a hot car. Well, if you see tefillin in a hot car, you can't phone the RSPCA, but you do require drastic action. Now, the Mechilta at the end of Parshas Bo and the Tanchuma at the end of Parshas Bo write, "V'shamata sachukra azos m'lamado miyomim yomimo." In Parshas Bo, it talks about tefillin, and from this, "Magid she'odom tzorech nidbokes hatefillin." So from here, we learn out that a person should check his tefillin achas mishnei masor chodesh, once in every 12 months, divrei Beis Hillel. But we don't paskin that way. Although Beis Hillel say you should check them every 12 months, Beis Shammai Amrim, Ein Tzorich Levodkon Olomis. According to Beis Shammai, you never have to check your tefillin, because once they're written, they have a chazoka. And where we do stress the importance of checking is by mezuzahs. By mezuzahs, we say twice in 7 years, they're open to the elements, they're more prone to being spoilt. So with mezuzahs, we're particular. But Beis Shammai say, I use my grandfather's, says Beis Shammai. So there's no problem. The Rosh writes in Hilchas Ketanas in Tefillin, he says, twice in 7 years, just like mezuzah from Gemara Yomar Yud Aleph. But that is not really the halacha either. The Shulchan Aruch in Lama Tes Sif Yud says he never requires you to check your tefillin, but if the tefillin are not regularly used, then they might be left somewhere where it's damp and ignored and neglected, then you should check them twice in 7 years. The Sefer Baruch She'omar and Yoh Rabba says that he discovered that when he did check tefillin, he found traces of sweat inside them. I shouldn't really use the word sweat. Horses sweat, men perspire, ladies glow. So the correct English terminology is, if you find perspiration in tefillin, it can come about from especially from the head, where the hair might have more of an effect with perspiration than on the arm. And he says every Yorei Shamayim periodically will have his tefillin checked. And Rav Lev Lapian writes in Lev Elio that, you know, many years go by since the person's bar mitzvah, so he's using the same tefillin, they get knocked about, and, you know, the square might be damaged, or some, there might be a black colouring lost from the ritzuas or something like that, and you might want to check the parshas every now and again, and he says you need to have them checked. And of course you don't even know if they were inserted in the correct order. And he said, you know, some people have this attitude that, well, you know, if I bought from this from Guy and he said to me they're 100% kosher, then the sin is on his head. I can't be worried that, you know, if he gave me a guarantee as to their kashrus, why should I feel responsible? He said that mentality is the wrong mentality. And he compares it to a person who buys very expensive jewellery for his wife, and he later on discovers that they're fake. And, you know, he spent hundreds of pounds on this jewellery. You wouldn't say, oh well, the sin is on this guy's head that he gave me fake jewellery. You feel very bad that your wife is wearing rubbish around her neck. So it's the same idea, that even if you were deceived, it's best to get your tefillin checked. Certainly if tefillin fell in water or something like that, or you had left it in your car many times, then there are reasons to encourage an early bedikah. Yes?
The thing that needs to be checked when tefillin change ownership.
Yeah, I'm coming to that actually. Yeah.
Sorry.
Let's deal with that. The chazakah which tefillin have are maintained when you change ownership. But the time when it said you should really check your tefillin is if you are inheriting them from somebody who died. Because there, there's a sefer called Lischas HaSofer in Klal Yudches. He says the schar for wearing tefillin, kosher tefillin, is arichas yomim. If somebody died, we don't know whether they might have died prematurely because of the inferior tefillin which they might have been wearing. So that justifies a complete check if one gets tefillin from somebody who was nifta. No reflection on the person who died, chas v'shalom, but just in case sort of thing. But if you do just happen to have a change of ownership, it doesn't quite stress the same importance. However, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says it's a good idea in the month of Elul for the conscientious to check their tefillin before Rosh Hashanah. Tosfos and Menachos in Mem Gimel, Dibur Maskil Tefillin, say you don't have to actually check for chaseiros, for actual words which are missing, or for yaseiros, for extra words, but you do have to check for wear and tear. And if you think there's been wear and tear, a letter might fade, just like with a mezuzah twice in 7 years, so also with a tefillin. Now what if you have a dream? What if you dream at night time that you're tefillin apostle? Do you follow that dream? We once had a bagel breakfast share about anxiety from dreams, and do you interpret your dreams the way you think they should be? Anyway, the Makor Chaim writes in Siman Lamed Tes Sif Yud that if you have a dream that you're tefillin apostle, then you should go and get them checked. I'm not suggesting that all your dreams are correct, and we do know from Rashi and Koheles that dreams are a figment of a person's imagination, and since I talked about it today, you might have a dream tonight about it.
I once knew
the late Sadigera Rebbe. Somebody once came to him and said to him, I had a dream the last three nights that my father came to me and said to me, come and visit me. What should I do? What should I do? So the Rebbe said to him, I want you to go straight to Poland where your father's buried on the next possible flight and go to his grave. Go straight away. He obediently went, and as soon as he arrived there, he found a bulldozer about to dig up his father's grave. And he managed to put a stop to it. So there is something in dreams. And the thing about mezuzah is, and tefillin is, it's not only that you're being mevatel a mitzvah saseh. It's not only that you're depriving yourself of a very important mitzvah. With both tefillin and mezuzah, there's this idea of sakono. And the Shevet Halevi brings this out, Rav Ozna, in his Chelek Zayin Siman Beis. And he talks about the idea of Arichas Yomim, and he bases it on Yeridah Resh Pehei. And he talks about a Mishnah in Megillah Chof Dalad on the base, which says, Oset Tfiloso Agulo. If a person makes the box of his tefillin round instead of square, Sakono V'ein Bo Mitzvah. Not only has he not got a mitzvah, but it's a danger. So with a mezuzah, you've got this insurance policy, just like you're doing a mitzvah, but in addition to that, you are saving yourself from sakona. So in the same way, if you wear kosher tefillin, you are saving yourself from sakona. And the Oz Zeruah writes in Tuf Kof Kuch Samachay, he compares it to the Dam Pesach, where Hashem jumped over the Jewish household. He passed over the Jewish household. And that by smearing the blood on the doorpost, that saved them from Misa. And it says there, V'lo yitein ha-mashchis. He says, a kal v'chomer by mezuzah and tefillin. If something which happened just once in history, where you could save yourself by putting something on your doorpost, and there was a sakona involved, so nowadays, for generations and generations following, there's a kal v'chomer which applies to doros, that if you put up a mezuzah and you wear tefillin, it saves you from sakona. All the more so, we should pay heed to that. And there are problems we spoke about when tefillin are not checked regularly. Rav Yitzchok Palagi writes in Yofel Alev Chelek Aleph Daf Kufpei base, he once opened up a shel rosh of tefillin, and he found no parshias inside at all, but he found garinim, sunflower seeds. My late great uncle Dayan Eliezer Posen, the Chayim Bracha, was a Dayan on the Ardas Beis Din, and he once got called to the customs office at Heathrow Airport, and he was asked to open up tefillin because the people who were passing through insisted that because they're holy articles, they're not allowed to open them up, and there was a strong suspicion as to what was inside. And he opened up the tefillin and he found diamonds inside. He fainted on the spot. Apparently, it also happened in the late 60s, early 70s, that the United States Customs appointed a Jewish customs agent officer because there was some gang using tefillin for the purposes of smuggling, and under the guidance of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, they managed to smash the ring with various methods. Rav Yaakov gave them guidance which kept confidential, but he made an announcement that smuggling diamonds in tefillin is equivalent to the raising of a white flag in surrendering in war and then throwing a grenade. It's not only fraud, but it betrays a symbol of civilization. He said they destroy the eternal sanctity of tefillin, and these rogues must be stopped. And these rogues, unfortunately, were Jewish people. Well, you've raised the idea of computer checking, and it's a very interesting subject, because the obvious question which comes up nowadays is there a chiyuv, is there a duty to use computer checks for your tefillin, for your mezuzahs, for your Sifrei Torah? And you might say to me, come on, our grandfathers never had computers, they never had computers, and therefore they couldn't have possibly carried out such checks, so why should we be duty bound to check our tefillin, mezuzahs, etc., if our great-parents, great-grandparents never had computers? You can't start creating new dinim, can you? On the other hand, you can argue, yes, well, it's true that our grandparents never had computers, but now that we've got the facility, and now that it's come to light that there are mistakes, then why not? Then we can do everything to the best of our abilities. It's like building a sukkah. It's true that you are mitztayer possum in a sukkah if it rains in, but if you can make it nice and modern with heating to the extent that it's comfortable and that you don't suffer from the cold, then you're doing everything you can with modern conveniences in order to be able to fulfill your mitzvah better. So this debate is discussed by the Shevet HaLevi, Rav Vosner, in his Chelek Zayin Siman Beis, and he writes some very interesting ideas. And he says, it's very hard to put complete trust on the Sofrim. And some of them, in the Avonis HaRabim, are not so Yirei Shemayim, or they're rushing because, you know, at the end of the day, they want to bring in the revenue, and they might, therefore, skim over things carelessly. And he quotes the Chasam Sofer, who says nowadays the people who are writing the Tefillin, the Sofrim, who are Bekiyim, they don't really have the same expertise like in former times. But Avonis HaRabim Makalkalim Umachshilim Rabim Hayim, and they are setting a trap for us. Rabbonim Einom Mashkichim Aleihem, they are not getting any supervision. I mean, do you get nowadays something under the supervision of such and such Beis Din? And he says, we don't even know who these Sofrim are. We're not told who their names are. And therefore, how reliable can they be? And people, they discover their tefillin apostle, Ubaalei and Bochim, and they start crying because they were not doing the mitzvah properly, and of course the huge amount of money they spent. And he said, it's true that a computer can't paskin for you, although some people think that computers can paskin now. In fact, you can buy the software where you can poke in the shayla, and up comes the printout of all the people who deal with it. And the most advanced software you can buy is you put into the computer the answer that you want to receive, and it tells you who asked the question. So he says nowadays you've got Pasile Daraisa being found, and Minash Shemaimu, it's something which is a blessing from heaven, Shehamsa Hazos Nischacho B'Dareinu, that we've got this invention. In a way, what he's saying is that this proverb is, necessity is the mother of invention. And that when we come to inventions, just like we had printing, when there was a danger of people forgetting Torah Sheval Peh, and then printing came about, why? Because of the Yeridas Hadoros. So printing was a wonderful godsend, forgive the pun, intentional pun. And so the same idea is with computers, that this is a necessity, a mother of invention. And he says, not only is it a good idea to use computers, but he says, you must use computers for your checks. In fact, the computers do find chaseros v'yaseros, extra words or missing words, but they won't always pick up letters which are touching each other. So you still need the human effort. You can't rely just on the computer itself, but it's an amazing thing of technology to be able to use it. Rav Sternberg writes in Chelek Beis of his Tshuvas Van Hoggis and also Chelek Gimel, he says you should use a computer, but it's not a chiyuv gomor. He doesn't see it as something which is an outstanding duty.
Is that the correlation between when you know who the sofa is and when you don't?
Well, even if you know who the sofa is, he might also have made a mistake. You never know. That goes back to what Rabbi Yapian said. Yes, you can say, oh, well, it's his achrayah, it's not mine.
When you don't know who the person is, therefore you, as I said, you don't know who they are, so you can make mistakes, they might be, lax with their responsibilities, etc. But when you know who
yes,
they are,
it's certainly more reliable to have a sofa whom you know. I know who wrote my tefillin, and he was someone called Samson in Stamford Hill, world famous, very reliable. His ksav is so good that other sofrim around the world recognize it as his. And somebody once said to me, well, his writing is the writing of the Ari, and your tradition should be the writing of the Beis Yosef, and therefore you shouldn't really wear them. So I asked Rav Cooper Zatzal, because not only were my tefillin written by Samson, my father's and my brother's, and we asked Rabbi Cooper for a psak, and Rabbi Cooper said, if Samson says your tefillin is kosher, then your tefillin is kosher. And more recently, when I did have my tefillin checked, and the man who checked them is a Beis Yosef man and not an Ari man, he said to me, because they are from Samson and they are so beautiful and they're so good, you should carry on wearing them, even if you feel you should wear the Beis Yosef ones. So, personal experience helps.
We have to be careful about computer checking. Even computers can miss things, obviously.
Yes.
We had a new secretary here years ago, and Jack Blau was the Balkira. Somebody stopped in the middle, and he said, this word is wrong, and it should have been a hay at the end, and there was an aleph, and it had been checked by the computer, and hadn't been spotted.
I'll tell you what the problem is.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what the problem is when you check with a computer.
Sorry.
If you find a spelling mistake, you've got to realise that a Sefer Torah has about 250 columns in it. And what happens with a computer check is the computer brings up from each column anything between 5 and 30 words which should be reviewed. where it raises the question. So out of that, you could, there's only a maximum of 7,500, but on average about 3,700 cases need a review. And what the computer asks you to do is either click to say it's not an issue, or check further that it may well be a mistake. So what, out of 3,700, this is from a Sefer Torah Levi, who did a computer check of 60 Sifrei Torah, and only 9 were found to be kosher.
What this computer said they were kosher.
So he says that what happens is that you're asked to click either delete, this is not a matter of concern, or to check. So you might get the human error there. So by the going through 3,300 queries raised by the computer, you're doing either click, check. And over the period of 3,500, you might get the human error of overlooking one which is a genuine mistake. So that's why he says it's a good idea to do a Sefer Torah check twice with a computer. There's a Sefer called Inside Stump by Rav Reuven Mendelevitz who says this as well. When computers started, the very first 100 Sifrei Torah they did, they found 83 which had spelling mistakes. Certainly it's less risk by to fill in because there's less to check. But and the computer is good for the spelling mistakes, but it's not good for the letters which might be touching, or if a letter is a little broken. So you do need the human effort. Now, what if you found after many years that your tefillin were posel, and since your bar mitzvah you've been wearing tefillin which are no good? You're going to feel very guilty about this. This question is addressed by Rav Avadi Yosef in his Shutz Yabia Omer, Chelek Zayin Simon Hey. Do you have a din of onus, or do you have a din of shogeg? Onus means you can't help it, you were forced. Shogeg is inadvertently, you didn't intend to do the avera, but you did, or you didn't do the mitzvah by accident. And then there's another question. If you are called onus or shogeg, or you were mevatel a mitzvah saseh, it's not that you did a low saseh, a don't commandment, you just haven't fulfilled a do commandment. But in addition to that, you've made brachas, which would have been brachas of atonah. So the Gemara Yuma Pevov says, if you violate a naseh, teshuva has an immediate kaporah. So the question of the bracha levatola comes up because that's really a lo saseh. Some say it's a din d'rabbanon, others say it's a din d'oraisa. Look, what's done is done. You can't undo the past. You made a mistake. You didn't wear the right tefillin. So there are a number of people who ask, what are the remedies? Rav Avadia addresses this as a Sefer Vayad Yosef, the Rokeach. And there are 5 remedies addressed for people who discover they had not been wearing kosher tefillin. One of them is to say regularly the parsha on the ola, the korban ola. Namely, you can't bring an offering as an atonement, but if you say the parsha on it, it's as if you've brought a korban ola. The second remedy is that you should have special kavona when you make the brachas in future to atone for the fact that you may have done brachas l'atola, that you have an additional kavona saying, I might have done brachas l'atola in the past, I now say my brachas with great kavona and say in humility in the future. Rav Avadia Yosef says quite an amazing thing. He says, if you discover for many years you've been wearing posel tefillin, you should start wearing Rabbeinu Tam tefillin as well. Now, this is a minhag of Hasidim and some others to wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, where the parshas are in a different order in the view of Rabbeinu Tam and not the view of Rashi, his grandfather. If we have time, we might discuss Rabbeinu Tam, but there won't be time for it today. But the general idea of Rabbeinu Tam, according to the Shulchan Aruch, is if you are a person, muchzak b'chassidus, if you are a very righteous person who is medaktik in his mitzvahs and conscientious, and you're muchzak b'chassidus, then it's a nice thing to wear in addition to your Rashi tefillin, Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. My great uncle, who I quoted before, Dain Posen, he was a yekker. And he was once asked, why don't you wear a Rabbeinu Tam tefillin? He said, why do I have to wear a Rabbeinu Tam tefillin? It's a chumrah some people keep. So the fellow said to him, yes, but it's somebody who's muchzak b'chassidus should wear a Rabbeinu Tam, and you are muchzak b'chassidus. So he said, that's all I need to hear when I go upstairs to Olam Ba'emes. If after 120 years I'm accused of being muchzak b'chassidus, thank you, then I won't have any problems. Another remedy written about tefillin as a remedy is wear it for a few extra minutes each day. So if you whip them off straight away in Aleinu, sit down for 5 minutes and wear them for a few minutes longer. And a further remedy written by the Vayan Yosef is try to promote the mitzvah amongst others. Spread the word. Buy tefillin for poor people. Help people check their tefillin as a sort of kapara for the fact that you didn't do tefillin properly all those years. Running a bit out of time, I will deal a little bit with concentration, which relates to all this. The Gemara Shabbos Yud Beis, the Gemara Yumos Af Zayin says, Chayav Odom Mishamish B'Tefillin Kol Shor V'Shor. You must always be wary of the fact that you're wearing tefillin. They are so holy, and you mustn't be distracted with secular matters. You must not have any secular thoughts. You may not have immoral thoughts, and if such a thing happens, inevitably, then you shouldn't wear your tefillin at all. That's how holy tefillin are, and a Kol V'Chomer is made on this by the tzitz. The tzitz is what was worn by the Kohen Gadol on the same place up here on the above the forehead, in the same place as the tefillin. It said on it, Kodesh Lashem. And so we learn a Kal V'Chomer. Ma tzitz she'eva elo'as kora achas, whereby the tzitz had Hashem's name written only once, shelo'siach da'atu bimenu, and the Kohen Gadol was warned he may not distract his attention. Then tefillin, she'esh ba'as koros harbe, tefillin has many as koros. Alachas kama v'chamo. All the more so, you have to be careful. You know, somebody came up to me already a few times. People have come up to me when I'm wearing my tefillin, and they ask me a question about something professional or something completely mundane. And I say to the fellow, you know, I'm wearing my tefillin. And sometimes they don't even get the hint. And tefillin have each, the Shel Yad has Hashem's name 21 times. The Shel Rosh has the name 21 times. 21, by the way, is the gematria of Ehyeh. 21 squared is 441, which is the gematria of MS. The importance of tefillin cannot be overstressed. So the Rambam, the Chinuch, bring out from in Hilchas Tefillin, Shelo Yasiach Datumen Afilu Rega Echod. You must not be distracted even one moment. So there is a discussion about, do we say Chok V'Kalas Roach? Does it mean you may not be frivolous enough? Or does it mean that every moment you should be concentrating on the fact you're wearing tefillin? Obviously, when you're davening, you're concentrating on the davening, and you're going to be very serious. But there are many practical issues which come out from this, and time doesn't really give us the opportunity. Now, I'll end off with a little moshul from Rav Elio Lapian, who said that tefillin are a bit like a transistor radio, because you're wearing something which is wireless, and the transistor radio came out. It's not connected to the ground power, but it's nevertheless something which manages with its radio waves to be with reception. In this room at the moment, there are hundreds and thousands of radio waves. You can't see them. And that's the same idea with the tefillin. And he said, if that transistor radio is missing one small part, then it doesn't work. A car, if it's missing one small part like a spark plug, it won't work. And he said it's the same idea with tefillin. The importance of tefillin is so prominent in our lives, and it draws rays of sanctity from above without the visible connection, but that connection is there. And even if the tip of one letter is missing, your tefillin are no good. Therefore, we have to be very careful with it. I'm intending to do a part 3 on tefillin. We're going to talk about the idea of women wearing tefillin. We're going to, so the feminists are welcome to attend. We're going to talk about tefillin on Chol HaMoed. If we got time, we'll talk about should you wear tefillin the whole day if you're able to, because you see these pictures of gadolim who seem to be wearing them all the time, and the advantages and disadvantages, and any other practical questions which might come up. The ritzuas, the knots. The chatzitza ideas, bandages, casts on your arm. There are so many questions which can come up on the subject, so we'll probably end up doing a part 3 and a part 4.
How do you prevent yourself having sex with or even more so immoral thoughts?
Distraction. Concentrate on what you're doing. A general message. And if that doesn't help, go swimming. Thank you.